welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight I'll be speaking with Rick Kaufman about Sheets, Sheets, and Kaufman, Art for Living and Living for Art. That's a special exhibit housed in two museums in Ontario. We also have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Sherry Keeler. She's playing the lead in Mary Poppins in a production based on the books by P.L. Travers and the Walt Disney film. That'll be in Riverside February 24th and 25th. To start, we have Steel Magnolias, running in Rialto, February 11th through the 26th. I spoke with director Mia Mercado, who's been a part of theater in the Inland Empire for quite some time.
Well, for me, it started really young. I remember going to Sons of Norway with my grandmother, and she would teach all of us the classic Norwegian songs, and her sisters would sing in harmonies. And so I picked up the ear for music very, very young. As far as theater, I think my first play, I was a Mexican jumping bean in kindergarten. And then it kind of grew from there. My mom had me in community theater. And as I got into high school, started branching out and working all over Southern California. Even at the age of 17, I would get in my car and drive 2 hours to rehearsal down in Orange County. It blossomed from there. I did have an 8-year hiatus in my 20s.
Okay.
And when I came back to it at 29, I decided I would never let it go. And so I just hit the ground running and have never looked back.
Good for you. Wow. And now you also teach at a regional school, Oak Valley Music Academy. Tell us what that is.
Well, it began as a music academy and has now developed into theater and dance studios as well.
And is that an all-ages thing, or is that for children?
We have students of all ages, and many of our students come to us from charter schools and homeschools. So we have a variance of different ages and levels. We teach everything from banjo, violin, piano, and voice to ballet, tap, and hip-hop. And then, of course, I have my acting classes.
Again, that's the Oak Valley Music Academy. As we go into this interview, or if folks just want to write it down now, to contact, that's oakvalleymusicacademy.com. We're going to be talking primarily about Steel Magnolias coming up, and this is the stage version of it. Let's talk quickly about just when and where this is.
Okay, so I'd like to invite all of your listeners. Come join us at Rialto Community Players. It's located in the Sandra R. Courtney Community Theater in Rialto. It's at 150 East San Bernardino Avenue.
And when will this be performed? It's coming up very quickly.
Yeah, the show runs February 11th through 26th. We have shows Fridays and Saturdays at 8 and Sundays at 2 p.m. And you can also find your tickets at rialtocommunityplayers.com. And I also think we also offer something on Gold Star.
Well, now, I think that Steel Magnolias, we're talking about a play, but Steel Magnolias is a movie that just about everybody saw in 1989, except for me. So I want to ask what I think is an acceptable spoiler alert. Now, I'd like to hear about the differences between the movie and the play, because this is a title that people love, but it was the movie to which they have endeared themselves. So let's hear about the basic differences so people just won't be disappointed. I wanted to see that guy. There's a good one.
Well, there are no gentlemen in this cast. It is a cast of six ladies, and the entire play takes place in Truvy's Beauty Shop. That's one major difference that the audience will find between the movie and the play.
Okay. There's differences, so some characters that folks may be expecting to see, they won't see them. But all of the, let's say, the main six ladies, though, are there. These characters that people know from the movie, that's represented in this play, yes?
Yes, it is. And all the characters that are not in the play that were in the movie are certainly referenced in the play.
Gotcha. Okay. So we spoke just a bit about some of the differences. There's going to be, of course, some similarity. Well, it's the same story, but in some cases, the same lines?
Yes, absolutely. There are definitely the same lines in the play that came straight from the play to the movie. You have to remember the play did come first. But there are a few things that were omitted. You know, there are things that they can do on film. They often extend the story on film. So this is more of a tight, condensed version. But all of the quick wit and the jabs and jokes and some of the more serious, tender lines are still contained in the play.
Good. One of the things that we were discussing when we were talking about this, you were telling me about the audition. So now, so many shows, you get maybe just enough people for your cast. And sometimes you get almost enough, and then you have to make some calls. And say,
that's
please,
right.
Please, what are you doing in May? This one is quite different. You didn't have that experience.
No, not at all. Quite the opposite. You know, I expected a nice turnout for this audition. I was only casting six ladies, but this is a popular play. It offers roles to middle-aged and older women, which are the bulk of who work in community theater. So it was quite unexpected when I had nearly 40 women come out for these six roles.
Oh my gosh.
And it was quite the challenge to read through them all, get to know them all, see them all in comparison to each other, and try and find just the right fit for our cast.
You may be hoping for maybe a dozen, and you'd have to whittle it down from there. And
right.
That'd be tough enough. Was it an open call? So all these 40 women, they were seeing everybody else do their thing on stage before it was their turn, as opposed to a closed audition.
Correct. So it was an open call. Whoever wanted to come out definitely could. And I invited many actresses to come. Not sure if I would be able to cast them, but certainly wanted to include them in the audition process. So there were a few standouts for me right away.
Oh, excellent.
And there were people that I really needed to consider and think about for two or three nights of auditions.
That's Mia Mercado, directing Steel Magnolias, running in Rialto February 11th through the 26th. RialtoCommunityPlayers.com for more. With all these 40-some women, what was it about the ones that made it in? Of all these women, how about a couple of standout elements? Go ahead and tell me about some of those that made your casting decision.
The most beloved person in the cast is Shelby, and some people would consider her the lead of the show, although I personally believe it's an ensemble piece.
Good.
The woman I cast for Shelby is a wonderful actress, and not necessarily what audiences may expect in a Shelby, but she won me over and just literally danced circles with her acting around the other girls.
Nice.
There was another woman who came out to audition for the role of Malin, and that was a very tough role. It's Shelby's mother, and she is a pillar of strength in this play. And so it had to be someone who not just fit the role, but embodied the persona of Malin. And so I was very happy to cast Jamie Foreman and Michelle Knight Reinhardt in those two roles.
Wonderful. Well, now we've kept on referencing, okay, this is the movie that everybody but me. We kept on referencing the fact that this is a stage version of the movie that everybody but me saw in 89. Okay, so let's just talk about a quick synopsis of the show. There are going to be a handful of people out there that don't know the story.
Okay, well, the play is set in the late 80s in Chinkapin, Louisiana, in Chuvie's Beauty Salon. And this is where all the ladies in town come to have their hair done. We have the old crotchety woman who has a ton of money. We have the mayor's widow who is grandiose as can be. And then, of course, the little hairdressers that are happy to have everybody come in every Saturday morning. And so it's really a story of this friendship between these gals that live in this small southern community and the relationship between Shelby and Malin as mother and daughter and addressing Shelby's special medical needs.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that this is not one that you've acted in. You've got quite an extensive resume, okay, and a really nice one. But
thank you.
You've not acted in this one, but would like to, but that's someday at the right age. Can you talk about this statement a little bit more?
Sure. I have a beautiful cast of various ages, but this show really caters to the elder gals and the younger gals as far as casting. There is a couple of roles that I would love to play in this show. I would love to play Weezer someday. She's the crusty old gal. And Clary is just lovely and fun, but she really is the stinger in this show. And Weezer is definitely the butt of many of her jokes. I would love to play either of those roles. Of course, Malin is a favorite role for many actresses because you really get to bite down and chew on it for a while. It's a very meaty role. But, you know, it's just one of those shows that every actress at some point wants to play a role in.
Okay. Before we close, let's not neglect to mention the techies, the tech support. You've got kind of an all-star lineup for this, regionally speaking.
I sure do, and I'm so blessed to have these people working by my side. You know, so much of what we do in theater depends on our tech crew, and they really don't get enough credit. So, I have a set designer, Carrie Jones, who is wonderful. Molly Staggs Griffin is doing my lights. Candy Kane is a beautiful costume designer. And, of course, Richard King, I couldn't do it without. He's my hair designer. And this play takes place in the beauty salon, and there's a lot of hairstyling going on during the course of events during the play. And Richard has really done a beautiful job in designing all the hair for this show.
So you really had to get somebody that could recreate 80s
That's right.
Oh, wow. Okay. Maybe it's good that there weren't any men there because the mullet was so thick and, yeah, okay, good, good. We mentioned diabetes a couple of times, so let's talk about this play and the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation for just a bit.
Well, Shelby does have type 1 diabetes in this play, and there are many challenges that come along with it that are brought to the surface throughout the dialogue. And it is a major crux oftentimes between Shelby and Malin of how to approach different things that come up in life having to deal with type 1 diabetes. And this is something that over 1 million people worldwide are living with every single day, and right now there is no cure. So I encourage people, if you want to do something to help research, to help scientific funding, please go to jdrf.org and donate to the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation so we can help people that live with it, and maybe one day we will find a cure.
Beautiful. Will there by chance be a donation availability once you actually get to the theater? Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Okay, good, good. Almost wrapping, someone who's never seen Steel Magnolias, the movie, or someone who's never read or seen the stage adaptation. Let's go even to that person who's avoided it because it was a movie for women, as it were. Give us that show description, or at least that thing about this story that would make someone want to see the show.
Well, I think it touches all of our hearts in many different ways. You know, there's the relationship between your friends that you depend on come hell or high water. And then there's the relationship you have with your family that should never be broken. And the tests that we go through are very relatable. Yeah, some people might consider it a chick flick because there are all girls in it. But you have a sister, you have a mother, you have a friend, you have a wife, you have a daughter that might end up in the same situation. So really, it applies to everyone. I would encourage all walks of life to come see this play.
One more time as well, the whens and wheres of it all, and the website that people can get more information, reserve tickets.
Steel Magnolias is running February 11th through 26th at the Sandra R. Courtney Community Theater. It is located at 150 East San Bernardino Avenue in Rialto, and you can get tickets at rialtocommunityplayers.com.
Mia, I appreciate you coming in and making time for this. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, as always. Thank you, David.
That's Mia Mercado, directing Steel Magnolias, running in Rialto, February 11th through the 26th. Information and tickets at rialtocommunityplayers.com.
Welcome to Shout, Black Gospel Music Moments. I'm Robert Darden. Here at the Black Gospel Music Restoration Project, we just received this disc by the WHB Wheat Street Baptist Church Gospel Choir. Now, if you're from Atlanta, you know Wheat Street. They've been serving the city from their sanctuary on Auburn Street for nearly 150 years. And from 1937 to 1989, the Reverend William Holmes Border Sr. served as the pastor, hence the WHB and the colorful record label. The Reverend Borders had a reputation for knowing and loving good gospel music. So I was delighted to be able to finally hear this well-loved little 45. The two songs are Live and Let Live and Searching. And the disc was released on the Small Hunter label. And man, it didn't disappoint. I particularly like Searching. This is classic gospel. It could have been recorded just about any time during the good Reverend's tenure, though I suspect it was cut in the early 1960s. Searching has a strong lead vocalist, a rollicking barrel house style piano, some tasteful Hammond B3 licks, and a no-holds-barred choir and chorus that probably lasts two of the 45's 3 minutes. Had this been recorded live at Wheat Street, I suspect it did go on for another 30 minutes at least. I'm Robert Darden. Shout, Black Gospel Music Moments, is produced by KWBU, the Black Gospel Music Restoration Project at Baylor University Libraries, and is funded by generous support from the Pritchard Foundation.
You can hear Shout Sunday mornings during Weekend Edition and here on KVC Arts, 91.9 FM, or streaming live at kvcrnews.org. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Sherry Keeler. Sherry is playing the lead in Mary Poppins, a production based on the books by P.L. Travers and the Walt Disney film. First, though, one exhibition housed in two museums. It revolves around artists working in both fine art and commercial art. It's artwork from Millard Sheets, his son Tony Sheets, and Ontario-based artist Rick Kaufman. I spoke with Rick recently about the exhibit and just who was Millard Sheets.
Millard Sheets is a highly recognized artist who passed away about 30 years. He had done major significant works in Southern California, designing all the home savings and loan banks and doing the murals that you see inside them, the mosaics, etc. He was also an instructor of the arts and brought in many notables into the Claremont community to work with him on these large projects and to also teach within the Claremont colleges, etc. So he had really garnered a collection of some of the most talented artists in the region and have also produced significant work that we see every day out in the public space.
And that's what we were talking about earlier. I'd like to talk for just a bit about commercial art. You know, when you meet an artist, you often think that they're talking about putting something on canvas or a drawing or a watercolor or whatever the case is. But let's talk about the term commercial art. You yourself, when I've talked to you in the past about what type of art you do, it's some fine arts and some commercial arts. So let's talk about just what commercial art is. And this is going to tie in later to what this exhibition is.
Well, commercial art can be seen in many different ways. Commercial art is typically the work that's done as a hired gun for a third party. You're there to speak on behalf of someone else artistically, whether it's a public space and you're out in the community or you're inside a business environment or you're out in print collateral, et cetera. Basically, your job is to put a positive face or an accurate representation of the institution or business or cause for that matter. And so you're hired because you have a certain artistic acumen or an aesthetic that seems to befit the overall mission, the mission being whatever it is that third party would like for you to do for them. So it's a kind of a broad thing, but many artists who work commercially are also studio trained, as in like myself.
We described it with Millard Sheets actually just a little while ago, some commercial art. It could be, say, posters or flyers or something as simple as that, or it could be something as complex as what Millard was doing, and that is designing things for entire savings and loans, the aesthetic of the building, the artwork that's actually inside. There's so much to that for commercial art. So with the exhibit that's coming up, Sheets, Sheets, and Kaufman, we were just speaking of Millard Sheets, the second Sheets, Tony Sheets. He is his son, but you can tell me more.
Well, Tony Sheets is a fantastic artist in his own right. He's slayed many dragons, and his work is seen also in public places. Quite often, you would look at a building and look at some reliefs. You get a positive feeling or a sense of place or whatever, but sometimes you don't know who the artist that did it. Maybe it's not as important, but Tony has done some very significant work in relief, et cetera. He's also a painter, and he's a traditional artist like his dad as well. And I also forgot to mention that, you know, even with Millard Sheets' work, his work was often seen in print for companies like Dole and companies like that, where his work was also gracing the pages of many magazines as well.
Okay, wow. Well, both of these guys, it seems, people are probably aware of their work, whether or not they even knew it.
Yeah, and also Millard and Tony had also gotten out there in the community as educators, and for a long time Millard has taught at Scripps College and Tony has run the Millard Sheets Art Center in the Fairplex. And that's something I also share with the two of them, is that I'm also an art educator. And so we have this tremendous love for art and tremendous love to share art, whether it be in a studio classroom or out in public, etc. But that's kind of the common thread, is that the three of us have basically made a career out of working for third parties and getting out there in the community, teaching what we do every day, and then getting into the studios and producing work that is more self-inspired.
And yourself, we also mentioned that you not just straddle the line, but you work in both commercial art and fine art, personal projects, your own exhibitions. This exhibition, again, it's Sheets, Sheets, and Kaufman, Art for Living. and living for arts. Talk about that phrase for a second, please.
Well, you know, the art for a living is, again, that's the part where, you know, everybody needs to eat. And so that's basically the blessing of being able to work commercially. And if you do it well enough, you get some exciting gigs or work that will actually help you do things like raise a family, et cetera. And then, you know, living for art is really something that comes from inside, that innate sense of creativity, the things that you practice, you imagine, you explore. That never leaves you. That's all connected. And so that's why the two exhibits and those two phrases, if you will, are intrinsically connected. They're not really separated.
Okay. Now, something about this exhibition, this sounds like a great catchphrase, and I guess it is, but it's also a description, and I want you to elaborate on it. Three artists, two museums, one exhibition. So we discussed already the three artists, and this is the exhibition. Two museums, and they're not normally connected, but this is a shared experience.
Well, the exhibit itself is certainly unique enough and worthwhile to come see. I think that it has something for everybody. But the bigger picture, or the bigger story, in my opinion, is that the community of Ontario had gotten together, and the museums that are literally across the street from each other have collaborated through direction of the city manager's office, city council, and then combined with other entities like the Convention Center and Visitors Bureau, the Heritage Society, lots of the museum associates, the community at large. There have been lots of support, even from private companies, you know, U.S. Bank and Best Best and Krieger. These are companies, I can't name them all because I don't know them all, but these are companies that have really invested in this and for this common cause. So this is an opportunity for Ontario to reestablish itself as a cultural and arts center. It's really a fantastic thing. So many people have been involved, even the people who are redesigning and actually preparing the museum grounds. It's completely renovated for this event. So we're all excited, and this has been a culmination of efforts that has gone on for probably 2 years, again, through the direction of City Hall. This is very important to many people for many reasons.
That's Rick Kaufman, one of the artists featured in Sheets, Sheets, and Kaufman, Art for Living and Living for Art. One of the nice things, you just glossed over it, and I want to call more attention to it, is that this is many things all at once. We've got the work of Millard Sheets, and in and of itself, that would be great to go see, okay? And same thing with Tony Sheets. Same thing with your work. I've gone to see your solo exhibitions. It would be exciting, I think, to see something in tandem with one or two other artists, as this is going to be. These are all outstanding artists just by themselves. Even though one of them is just across the glass from me, I'm saying that. But now the thing is, too, the city, they re-landscaped. There's new creations for this in place just for this event?
Well, the museum, through their staff, had garnered some funds through a grant to basically renovate the landscaping around the museum. So they had already done that, but because of this exhibit, they've accelerated the pace and really wanted to make sure that this major opportunity, this major exhibit, was a showcase for everybody's energies and efforts, including the folks that have worked on the landscaping, et cetera. It's really quite a thing. I think that this all started out with a phone call with me talking to Tony Sheets and saying, hey, what about this idea? And he liked it. And then I called a friend of mine who happens to be a city council member, and I said, hey, Debs, you're not going to believe this. I'm going to do an exhibit with Tony Sheets. And she said, over my dead body, is that leaving Ontario? So it's kind of like, be careful what you wish for kind of thing. And it kind of mushroomed into a celebration of not only mine and Tony's work with his dad, but a celebration of the community coming together and doing something pretty significant, actually.
And one of the cool things that I can't let go of either is that long after this exhibit goes away, the new landscaping, the new shape, the new look of everything, that's still going to be there. So this is quite a transformative project. What is the best website, by the way, for people to go to have more information on this?
Well, I think you can go to two different ones that'll help. But if you start out with OntarioArts.com or through the City of Ontario, or the Ontario Convention Center Visitors Bureau, as well as the Chaffee Community Museum of Art. Okay. They're all sort of tag-teaming on this, and beautiful. So you can find the information through any of these websites. But I think Ontario Arts or Art in Ontario will probably get you there the easiest.
Okay. So a person can go there to stay abreast of various events and things coming up, whether or not we're able to speak about them here. But let's talk about the artist reception for the public. This is looking ahead just a little bit, no matter which air date you're catching this on, looking at February 12th.
What's going to be great about this, the public reception on the 12th, and it's between 1 and 4, is that Tony and I will be around. We'll be able to explain a lot of the work that probably people would like to know more about, because there's a lot of process involved in the displays, especially at the Museum of History and Art. So there are techniques or perhaps workup sketches or things like that that might inquire more, I guess, questioning. I think it's also a great time for students. I hope students show up, because that's one of the primary reasons for doing this exhibit, is to show students how to put art back on the menu, how to look at art and not feel that if you do commercial art, you're not a fine artist, or just even imagining what it would be like to be an artist and to see that it's all-encompassing, and that for maybe some of the parents to see, oh, wow, if my kid goes into art, maybe they can't put food on the table or whatever. So it's kind of that story, is to show that, you know, you work hard, you apply yourself. I mean, we were having this joke in lunch, and that is, you know, you talk to kids about applications, they go immediately to their phones. What we're talking about is how to apply your creativity out there in the public world. Yeah. So that's pretty much the story behind that.
Again, it's something I want to re-stress of something you just said, is the fact that you can make art, and just because it's not on a canvas hanging in some well-respected museum or gallery somewhere, you can be doing this commercial art. You're not selling out. You're still creating art. Most importantly, you're making a living.
Well, the truth be told, I would say that at this level of my experience, the art that I create for, let's just say, for income in a fine art venue is compensating but not profitable. But when you work as a fine artist, you're working for companies and institutions, et cetera, that you're going to be able to make an income. I mean, that's where most of my income has come, is all my commercial work, not so much in my fine art work.
In the theater world, we call that as almost a steady check. So that's what we would...
pretty much.
That's what we all hoped for one day. Okay, during the artist reception on Sunday, February 12th, again, that's 1 to 4 p.m., there's going to be a gathering, socializing around 1, from 1:30 to 2:30, a walkthrough of each of the museum's exhibits by the artists. Then at 3, there's going to be an introduction of the artists, including Chick Curtis. Talk about him for a second, who this is.
Well, Chick Curtis is an artist that was selected to show in the Spotlight Gallery of the Chaffee Community's Museum of Art. Chick has, from what I know, has a fair amount of supporters and people who really admire his work. And I've seen his work. I think it's fabulous. And I think that it's a big world out there. There's enough room for everybody to go out and have a good time. And I look forward to chit-chatting with him and having a fun day.
Beautiful. So again, the reception that we were just speaking of with Chick Curtis and speaking with Rick Kaufman and Tony Sheets, that's going to be Sunday, February 12th, 1 to 4 p.m. Then this is going on, though, at two museums. So get us straightened out on the map, if you will. Which museum, where are they located? Do you start at one, go to the other?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, because museums are not necessarily easy to find. The museum, the best way to imagine it would be downtown Ontario on the southeast corner behind this big building. There are two museums that are there. You might be able to see some marquees. I'm not sure how the landscaping is going to finalize, but marquees for the museum from that corner. But basically, it's downtown Ontario, just below Holt, off of Lemon. The museums are right across the street from each other. There's no timetable. There's no admission, nothing like that. These museums are free to the public always. And once you're at one, you're in both, actually, and you can go back and forth at will.
Wonderful. And that's going to be the Ontario Museum of History and Art on Euclid Avenue and Chafee Community Museum of Art on Lemon. Two different streets, but they're right across the street from each other, yes?
Yeah, and there's also a public parking facility right there.
Perfect. So. Looking forward to this exhibition. Rick, thank you so much for coming in. This is something really to look forward to. Again, an exhibition from any one of these three guys is so well worth going to, and it's fascinating just by itself. But these three combined, and looking again at the fact that this combination of fine art on one side and commercial on the other, it doesn't have to be one or the other. This is going to be a great example of this marriage between the two.
Well, thank you so much for having me, David. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope everyone can show up. Thank you.
That's Rick Kaufman, one of the artists featured in Sheets, and Kaufman, Art for Living and Living for Art. Again, the public reception is Sunday, February 12th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Ontario Museum of History and Art and the Chafee College Museum of Art. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org, I'm David Fleming.
Super, Cali, Fragilistic, Expialidocious!
Up next, Mary Poppins, coming to the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside, February 24th and 25th. We have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Cherry Keeler, playing the lead. And what we didn't know, she's a local actress.
Yes, I'm actually in Hemet today. This is where I work during the day, but I live in the city of Marietta.
So you're a local gal?
I am, yes. I grew up in the area. I graduated from Temecula Valley High School in 2001 and then attended Cal State Long Beach, so I stayed in Southern California. And now I'm still living in Marietta where I have my family and love living in this area.
So you must be pretty pleased that you have the leading role of such a big show right here in the Inland Empire.
Yes, it's absolutely a dream come true. It's been an amazing experience, and I've enjoyed every moment of having the opportunity to play Mary Poppins.
It doesn't mean anything. It can mean exactly what you want it to.
We're speaking with Cherry Keeler, who will be playing the lead role of Mary Poppins when the production comes to the Riverside Fox Performing Arts Center in February, February 24th and 25th. As Cherry has indicated, she is a local gal and will be playing this role very soon.
Oh, supercalifragilistic, expialidocious, say it and wild animal, not seem so ferocious, and some further flourishes, it's so rocococious.
You've played many roles, looking at your resume and bio. What do you think of this role? This is kind of a big thing. I guess I'm setting you up if I say, were you a big Disney fan? But were you?
I absolutely am a big Disney fan. I love everything Disney. And this movie is very special to me. It's one that I've enjoyed watching with my children and growing up myself for the years. And it's a part that I had always dreamed of playing and now have the opportunity. And it's just been absolutely wonderful. I feel I can relate to the character in so many ways on a personal level, and it's been an amazing experience just to even become a better performer myself through the process, and I have loved every minute of it.
So why have you dreamed of playing this role? What about it was something that you said, I'd love to do someday?
Well, vocally, the score is just beautiful, and to be able to sing the role is very exciting for any soprano. And the character, she's an angel who comes down to help fix families, and I just think that the character is such a wonderful person who is able to make such a difference in so many people's lives through the story, and to be able to be a part of that and see the change every time we run through the show in the characters and the difference that it makes in their lives, to have the guidance from Mary Poppins, and then to be able to share that with the audience, it's an amazing experience to go through every time we do it, and it never seems to get old.
When I was a little girl and I watched the movie, I thought Mary Poppins was not nice for leaving Jane and Michael. As I watch it as an adult, I get that she's decided, my work here is done, it's time to go on to another family. As your children watch it or will see it, what do you think they will think, other than moms out there?
I think that they will be sad to see her go, but I do think that they can see the change in the family and that she has done what she set out to do. Mary Poppins came there to help this family learn to love one another and appreciate each other and the time that they have together. And I think that they will be able to see that and value the experience for what it is and know that her job is complete and she's able to move on and help others.
Got it.
S-U-P-E-R-C-A-L-I-M-O-B-G-I-L-I-S-T-I-C-E-S-T-I-N.
in playing this role, are you with a traveling company? You're going to different venues, or is this a local cast?
It is a local cast, but it is a small tour. We have two locations. We actually just completed a weekend of performances at the Pechanga Casino, and we are going to be at the Fox Theater as well coming up in February. We're really excited to be doing it again. So we have about a month break in between the two venues.
Sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine.
So then let me just ask, when you're only doing a couple of performances, where do you rehearse and block the original scenes? Where are you that you rehearse to block the scenes when you worked with the company before you went on the road?
We have a warehouse in Temecula where we've been rehearsing. It's a really big space where we're able to use all of our sets and props.
Nice.
And it's been wonderful. Our stage itself actually travels, so all of our spike marks and everything that we would need for spacing on the stage, we're able to rehearse with in our warehouse. So that's been a wonderful experience, having those things available to us for rehearsal. So the transition into the theater has not been a challenge so far.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
Because Mary Poppins is so gifted and she can fly or be lifted by her umbrella, are you able to set up the rehearsing of that part in the warehouse as well?
We don't do any of the flying in the warehouse. There are a couple of special effects that we are able to do that are part of our set piece. We have an elevator that sends the actors up through the chimney onto the rooftop, which we are able to rehearse, but not the actual rigging. Each venue has a company that manages their rigging within their theater, so we aren't able to rehearse that until we actually get to the venue. But we have great, wonderful trained professionals handling the flying, and it was a very easy transition.
That's Sherry Keeler, conversation with Lillian Vasquez. Sherry is playing the lead in Mary Poppins, coming to the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside February 24th and 25th.
So let me just ask you about the flying. I mean, I always thought it would be cool if we as human beings could fly when I was a little girl. But how is that for you when you actually get in the harness? How is that for you? And the first time you did it, what were you thinking?
I thought I was going to be scared because I generally am afraid of heights, but it really wasn't scary at all. In fact, I feel very secure. The harness is very snug and tight to my hips. And once I'm hooked in, the gentlemen that were flying me in our last venue, I didn't feel for one moment that I wasn't safe. And I actually do fly through the audience at the end of the performance above all of the audience members and through the house. And I just don't look down. But it's actually very fun and so exciting and such an amazing way to end the show.
So you don't look down. You just look up and as you're going up into the clouds?
Yes, I don't look down, I don't look back.
And do you feel that the audience, the young kids in the audience, are in awe? What do you hear in the audience as you're about to be lifted?
I think they're absolutely in awe. It's just an amazing moment in the show. It's usually sort of a gasp or a sigh that I hear right when I come out, and everyone's fascinated, and it's a wonderful moment. Musically, the orchestra builds that moment. It's a really lovely moment. The lighting, everything is just perfect, and it's a great closing to the show.
Well, we're speaking with Sherry Keeler, who is in the starring role of Mary Poppins. She will be playing the wonderfully loved nanny when it comes to the Fox Performing Arts Center in February.
Well, that was very... Thank you, Mom. Thank you. Anything can happen if you let it. Sometimes things are difficult, but you can bet it doesn't have to be so. Changes can be made. You can move a mountain if you use a larger spade. Anything can happen, it's a marvel. You can be a butterfly.
In speaking with this and just playing the role, we've been talking more of the technical part. Let's talk about some of the music that you'll be singing. Many of the songs are what we know from the movie, but there are a few other songs in there, are there not?
Yes, there are a couple of additions. Really great songs as well. Anything Can Happen If You Let It is one that has been added that was not originally in the movie. I love that song. It's toward the end of the show. But I definitely would say that my favorites are those that are from the movie. Jolly Holiday, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. That one's probably my favorite in the show and seems to be a popular one with the crowd. Feed the Birds is a beautiful one. Step in Time, Chim Chim Tree. Those are all songs from the movie that most people would recognize.
And do you feel that the audience is singing along with you? And I would guess that maybe it's the adults that are singing along with you, if they are, more so than the children, because many of the children today probably haven't seen the movie Mary Poppins.
I think some have. You might be surprised.
In fact,
at our last venue, we had quite a few little ones who came dressed up as Mary Poppins and Bert at the performances, and they have seen Mary Poppins at Disneyland. So I think Mary Poppins is definitely having a comeback as the musical has been such a big success.
I don't know that Mary Poppins ever left, as far as I'm concerned. It is one of my all-time favorites. When it's a rainy day and I have 2 hours where I just want to do nothing, I'll pop in Mary Poppins, and I'm over 50, so I don't think Mary Poppins has gone away. You've performed this in a couple of places, but you've been acting for quite some time. Share some of the other roles that you've played in your career.
One of my favorites that I played recently is The Witch in Into the Woods, the Sondheim musical. I really loved playing that role. Another one is Marion in The Music Man. I actually was able to perform that role opposite of my husband, Paul Keeler. He played Harold Hill, and I played Marion. It's really fun to be able to do projects with him. He's also a performer and a teacher. Another of my favorites would be Tupton and the King and I.
Oh.
I love the classic musicals. There's many, many that I've loved, but those are probably my favorites.
So you grew up in the area, went to school in Long Beach. Is that where you got your music training, or were you training as a little girl and wanted to be on the stage at a very early age?
I did grow up training, and I did lots of children's theater when I was young. And as I grew to be a teenager, I started doing some regional productions as well and continued my private vocal training and dance training and acting. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I started teaching and kind of got focused a lot more on teaching. I feel that that's really been a big part of my calling in the arts, and what I've loved to be able to share my knowledge in the arts with my students and be able to continue to grow as a teacher and a performer with every experience, whether it be performing or teaching. So I did get my degree from Cal State Long Beach from the Bob Cole Conservatory of Music, and I studied music there, classical music. I learned to sing in four languages,
Wow. And
that was a wonderful learning experience as well. I definitely improved my musicianship and performance skills through that process.
You mentioned that your husband is an actor as well. So between the two of you, are your children heavily involved in the theater, or are they out playing sports?
They do a little bit of both. Our boys are 8 and 5, and our youngest, Juliet, she's 2. So they all love to sing and dance, and they definitely do enjoy performing in productions and theater. The boys are both on my dance team at my dance studio in Hemet, and they love that as well, gymnastics, performing, anything that they can get their hands on. But they definitely love sports as well and being a part of anything active. And they're busy, busy little ones, that's for sure.
Super Cali Friday.
So you have a dance studio in Hemet.
Yes, I do. It's called the Dancer Studio. I had it for 12 years, and we teach performing arts there. It's not just dance, but we teach voice, dance, and a variety of different avenues of performing arts.
Okay, so then tell me about the audition part. Where did you go to audition for Mary Poppins? If you knew it was coming here locally, and you live here locally, I'm guessing this was an opportunity for you to play, as you described, a great role, but the good part for you with the family was that it's going to be here locally. Was that an attraction to you when you decided to audition?
It definitely was. And it's sort of a small world in the world of theater, especially in this area. It's great to know people, but most people will establish a reputation if they've been good to work with. And my husband actually worked with this company. He played Javert in Les Miserables 2 years ago. So I've known the people that produce these shows for quite some time, but this is my first time actually working with them. And when I was invited to audition for the role, I had heard that they were doing it, but I hadn't heard of an audition date. So it was quite an honor to be asked to come sing for the role. And so it was actually a private audition for this particular show. And once I was offered the role, then I got right to work on memorizing and studying and preparing far ahead of time before we actually started rehearsing with the rest of the cast.
What song did you sing for your audition?
I actually sang a little bit of almost every song in the show. So I was asked to sample different moments in the show just so that the director could hear the different songs and the different types of energy that would be coming from the different moments in the show.
And who plays Bert in the show?
Bert's name is Fisher Cake. He's a very, very talented man, and he is actually a former student of mine, which made this experience really special for both of us because he was my student when he was a teenager, and now he is performing professionally in many different venues. And the story of Mary and Bert is very sweet in that I believe that Mary was Bert's nanny at one point in the past, and that Bert grew up admiring her and always, you know, wanting to be her. And I believe that Bert is an angel in training, so he is wanting to become what Mary Poppins is and have a positive effect on the lives of others just as she has. So throughout the course of the show, Bert is constantly trying to get Mary to give him a kiss on the cheek, and finally by the end of the show, she does say goodbye to him and give him a kiss on the cheek, and it's very sweet.
Well, it's a very interesting idea of what you think of Bert. I'd never thought of that before. So let me ask you, can you spell supercalifragilisticexpialidocious now?
I absolutely can. Would you like me to spell it or sing it for you?
Both.
You like to sing it and spell it. Okay. SUPERCALIFRAGILISTICEXPIALIDOCIALUS.
Wow.
And of course you can say a DAP word, which is SUPERCALIFRAGILISTICEXPIALIDOCIOUS.
Thank you.
For you from the song.
Thank you, Sherry. It's been great talking with you, and we look forward to seeing you in the role of Mary Poppins when it comes to the Fox Performing Arts Center on February 24th and 25th. It's been delightful speaking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
And
look forward to seeing you at the theater.
That's Sherry Keeler in conversation with Lillian Vasquez. Sherry is playing the lead in Mary Poppins, coming to the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside February 24th and 25th. Tickets and information at kvcr.org/events. Just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Sherry Keeler, Rick Kaufman, and Mia Mercado. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Lindsay Boyd, and General Manager Alfredo Cruz. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVCR's programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.